So here I am again, James McLean, ready to place on the shelf for what in my terms is your future listening, a Casterbras podcast that, what at this very moment in your terms, is your immediate present, soon to become near past before slipping into the realms of the distant past, collecting on such other prior events, be they of historical consequence or not, which amongst other things would include this moment I voice this intro to edit into the podcast so I can place on the shelf for your future now present enjoyment. Be it sexual enjoyment or hopefully otherwise. Time is a funny thing, a collective of tenses booted into order by the demands of cause and effect, though in this particular circumstance, cause and effect are strangely uncertain bedfellows. My point is this podcast was done early in the week for this weekend's season premiere. Since then we have had the sad passing of Elizabeth Sladen, Sarah Jane Smith. This episode was recorded before that event. In this regard, forgive the fact that we don't mention her in this session. So I hope after a period of reflection and respect for one of the show's greatest actresses, you're in the mood for some more reflection. This time on the show's second seasons. Christian Crawley, editor and chief of Casterbras.com, lead us in.
Ladies and gentlemen, readers of Casterbras and listeners of the Casterbras podcast with a K, my name is Christian Crawley, with me is James McLean, and today we're going to be speaking about Doctor Who, as ever. Only this time we're going to be focusing on the fact that this is Matt Smith's second series that starts in a few days' time on Saturday the 23rd of April, which means he's already had a year to get it right, as has his boss Stephen Moffat. So we're going to look back at all the other Doctors who have managed to make it to a second series and have a look at their first episodes. Isn't that right, James?
Yes, I think it tallies to about nine Doctors because obviously McGann technically didn't even get a first series and Eccleston left before there was a second series of his.
That's right.
So all the other Doctors have had a second series. And if we get time, I might even mention the second episodes, because obviously at the moment in the press, the first two episodes of Matt Smith's new series are very much under the limelight. So, I mean, if we go back, I must say, having a look through the list, Christian, these are all pretty good, to be honest, the majority of them. And perhaps that shows an indicator of how a show finds its feet by the second series.
It could well be, yeah. I certainly wouldn't disagree with that.
Planet of the Giants was the first episode of season two, which is a bit of a low-key episode to come in on. I mean, obviously, series weren't quite as vital then because there wasn't so much of a gap.
Yeah, they weren't structured in the same way to sort of build up to something at the end.
Exactly. You know, you had a very small hiatus and then you came back. So maybe on the William Hartnell front, not so much a second series per se, a premiere, but Planet of the Giants was the first one. I've always liked that one, to be honest. I thought it was actually very well done given the budget.
Yeah, I think they got away with a lot there. And I mean, this is going to apply to a lot of the black and white stuff, though. But you could get away with more with black and white, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
As soon as you monochrome, it's interesting with the John Pertwee episodes, which we've still only got in black and white, how I think they, like Planet of the Daleks, actually look better when they're in the black and white ones than when it...
I'm not so sure about Planet of the Daleks. I know what you mean. I can think of which scenes you mean. And that there is an improvement, I think. But... particularly, Invasion of the Dinosaurs looks miles better in black and white than it does in colour.
Yeah, yeah. And if we just going back to the Hartnell one, follows through with the Dalek Invasion of Earth straight after, which I still think is one of the best ones of the era as well.
It's legendary in its own right, isn't it? Well, I mean, even the episodes are legendary in their own right, and then you've got the film as well, which possibly more people are more familiar with, Dalek Invasion Earth 2150, which is more or less the same story with a few tweaks. But yeah, that's a strong run of episodes, actually. If you go through the rest of it, everything else that's in there, you've got the Romans and the Crusade in the same season.
Yeah, I like both of those.
Yeah.
Romans especially was a nice risky gamble with a little bit of comedy in there, a little bit of farce.
I mean, it's obviously not perfect because you've got the chase in there as well.
Yeah, I must admit, I'm never a fan of the chase.
No.
It feels very childlike to me and very linear. And budget-wise, it really was too much for that budget to hold. But moving on to Troughton, maybe. Troughton, again, has possibly the legend. Is it overrated, Tomb of the Cybermen?
No, I don't think so. No, well, it's not in this house, anyway. Not in this wing of Casterbridge Towers. No, it's a marvellous Tomb of the Cybermen. I think also, we've just compared two stories there that are very different examples of Doctor Who. But if I was to ask my good wife which one of those two that she wanted to watch, every time she would pick Tomb of the Cybermen. And, you know, we do this often. We watch classic Doctor Who together quite often. She absolutely cannot get away with William Hartnell as the Doctor. I think it might be a lot of his idiosyncrasies. Or line forgetting, however you want to put it. But she absolutely loves Patrick Troughton as the Doctor. Mm. And that's obviously, again, that's another strong run of episodes.
Well, for series. Me, I mean, if we go, again, going back to Planet of the Giants, the issue with Planet of the Giants, perhaps for me, is you're starting to see at this point a certain degree of dilution of Ian and Barbara as the Doctor starts coming more to the fore and starts taking their role as the moral compass of the stories. So in that sense, I could agree with her. I'm not a massive Hartnell fan, but I like the early episodes because I think Hartnell works really well with William Russell and Jaclyn Hill.
Yeah.
Very, very well. I think they work so well, those three. Susan's good as well, but I think those three really hold it together.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I think as soon as you lose them, as soon as the chase comes along, and you're left with Hartnell, and this isn't really just to blame Hartnell, but his character has changed a lot by then. He's a lot more watered down. He's a lot more fluffy. And I find him a bit boring by then. But the early ones, where he's a little more antagonistic, a little more selfish, I think they're far more fascinating. But yes, sorry, going on a tangent. Tomb of the Cybermen. Yeah, I think it's a very good story. I think I was let down when I saw it, because I remember in the early 90s when I used to read the Nostalgias in Doctor Who Monthly, and they would talk about Tomb of the Cybermen and how amazingly claustrophobic it was. It almost overpitched it, overselled it. So when I saw it, I was a little disappointed. But I watched it again the other day, and I was thinking, this is really fun stuff.
It's really good. I think there's a lot to it, and it's quite sort of deep in places. And then obviously you've got loads of stuff going on in it that you wouldn't see in other shows at the time, or even other Doctor Who episodes at the time. You've got, you know, you've got Toberman, for start off. What's interesting about Tomb of the Cybermen is how it's managed to retain its dignity in the face of Attack of the Cybermen.
the attack of the Cybermen.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. The one thing I like about Tomb of the Cybermen, which is kind of rare for the period and doesn't really start happening again maybe till McCoy, is Troughton is quite manipulative in that episode. Obviously he's very inquisitive, which is very Doctorish, but he's pulling a lot of strings. He's not doing it very well either. But yes, a brilliant episode. It has a good status, doesn't it?
That's right. They all do, really, in that series.
Yeah, absolutely.
For one reason or another, you've got the Ice Warriors, which is obviously the Ice Warriors from Mars, a big giant...
Warriors made of ice.
Bipedal lizards made of ice. Bipedal lizards. You've got the Enemy of the World, where you've got Patrick Troughton playing two roles. You've got the Web of Fear, you've got Fury from the Deep, and you've got the Wheel in Space.
Wheel in Space sometimes gets a bit of a
lukewarm criticism. I like the idea. It's a funny one, the Wheel in Space, because I had an idea for the Wheel in Space before I even knew what the Wheel in Space was. You know, I think it's one of those, I'm obviously going back to sort of childhood now, but it's an archetypal Doctor Who concept, I think, or an archetypal sci-fi concept anyway.
Were you planning as an original and catchy title as the Wheel in Space?
No. I'm not very good at story titles, unfortunately. No.
The round thing in the vacuum. Season 8. Is John Pertwee's season.
Yeah.
And again, we're seeing the same trend, a very strong second series. And by this point, it's worth pointing out, because, I mean, the way that seasons ran changed dramatically in the end of Patrick Troughton's era.
Mm.
And by John Pertwee, we're starting to see the established way of how the show formulated itself. So this could arguably be the template season, maybe. I don't know.
Well, it's probably also worth mentioning or worth discussing that with season 7, I mean, I remember seeing Barry Letts in person talk about this, how it wasn't really their series. They were operating in the constraints of what had already been arranged for them by Derek Sherwin from the previous season, that like bring the Doctor Who budget down, bring it to Earth, filming it in colour, so all those things could be done. By the time they get around to season 8, then it's properly Barry Letts and Terence Dix's series. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this could be something that possibly follows through in several other ways, maybe further back, maybe forwards, although obviously they had more producers in the 60s, so maybe I'm just talking nonsense. But certainly with season 8, which kicks off with Terror of the Autons and introduces the Master,
yeah,
we've got a really strong episode, a really strong story kicking off a strong season, which continues with Mind of Evil, the Claws of Axos, Colony in Space, and then finishes with the demons. But Terror of the Autons, one of your favourites?
Yeah, I think it's a very good one. I think it is interesting because this, and the first season of John Pertwee was very good as well in its own way.
I'm a big fan of season 7.
I would possibly say I'm more of a fan of season 7 than any of the other seasons of John Pertwee's.
Yeah, same here. Yeah,
it stands out as something that feels different to pretty much every other era of Doctor Who. Season 7 is my favourite season. I think Mind of Evil is possibly my favourite John Pertwee story.
Right.
So again, that's
who's the bad guy in the Mind of Evil?
It's the Master, isn't it?
Oh, is it?
It's the one with the two.
So what, which one is the Claws of Axos? Who's the bad guy in the Claws of Axos?
It's the Master again.
No, that's not what I'm thinking. Which one? Colony in Space. Who's the bad guy in Colony in Space?
We could run this as a running gag here. It's the Master again. Do you want to go on the demons and we'll just finish off?
Who's the bad guy in the demons? Never like that guy at the beginning, you know.
Oh, right, the demons, the guy at the beginning. I see John Pertwee. Yeah.
No, you know, I can't remember his name. The guy who was the professor who was like, organising the dig.
Yeah.
He was no more of a professor than I am. He was a farmer. Very sinister guy. I wouldn't be surprised if that wasn't also the Master in disguise.
He does like his disguises at this point. I love the Master. I love his disguises. They always remind me of the A-Team and Hannibal and his disguises, you know, the false rubber nose and the moustache and the slightly different name hanging around, and suddenly removes the moustache or the silly name and everyone's shocked that it's actually...
No, it's you!
No, really, it's you, God. So moving on from Mr. Pertwee, we go into... Mr. Baker, the original Baker, the original, you might say. Terror of the Zygons, again. Are we seeing a trend of shows and, at this point, producers all sort of establishing, the actors maybe, establishing themselves, and so the second season start really well?
Possibly, yeah.
I mean, to be fair, and I don't want to knock any of the later Doctors, but so far, I mean, if you look at the general quality of seasons through all these Doctors, they're normally pretty strong anyway. I mean, season 12 before season 13 with Baker's Robot, Ark in Space, Sontaran Experiment, Genesis of the Daleks, Revenge of the Cybermen is, again, considered to be a classic. So, okay, that's an interesting question. Is season 13 more of a classic season than series 12? Is there, to a certain degree, is there a dip in quality? And the same could be asked of Pertwee, because we were saying that Pertwee season 1 was a very strong season.
Yeah. When you look at the list of episodes, speaking personally, the strongest run is from Brain of Morbius through to Talons of Wang Chang. No, in fact, beyond that, through to probably Image of the Fendal.
Yeah.
In terms of Tom Baker. So that would probably, for me, personally speaking, I would probably say that season 14 was the strongest of them all. But if we just... choosing between season 12 and season 13, it's a bit of a tough call. I'm not a big fan of Planet of Evil.
No, nor am I.
I'm not that much of a fan of the Android Invasion, but I'm grateful that they cut it down to 4 episodes. Because that could have been a 6-parter quite easily, couldn't it? And that would have been horrific. But then again, you've got Brian Morbius and you've got the Seeds of Doom. Seeds of Doom is one of my all-time favourite Doctor Who's. I can watch that any time.
It's a nasty little Doctor Who, that. It's surprised it actually got made. Because, you know, you've got such nasty transformation pods. It's all quite adult concept, adult sci-fi concepts.
You've got the Doctor decking people and wielding a gun in places as well.
And then you've got the villain going down the disposal at the end, which is still quite harsh.
Wonderful, though, isn't he, the villain?
Yes.
Chase, yeah.
It's a great episode. Great story.
I also like the bit as well where they've got Sarah Jane in the lab with her arm out and waiting for the pod to open and infect.
Yes.
And the Doctor's looking through the window at the top and he crashes in, hits Scorby with a chair, nicks his gun, grabs Sarah, and Harrison Chase says, "Doctor, what do you do for an encore?" And he goes, "I win." Brilliant. But going back to Terror of the Zygons, that must have been like fantastic to watch the first time round back in 1975. As a new series with the Doctor now firmly established as, with Tom Baker, now firmly established as the Doctor. So again, that's another great second season opener and a great second season.
It is. I agree. I think Tale of the Zygons is a brilliant episode and a very sad one for me because I really like Harry Sullivan. I think he's a great character and yeah. It's a shame that he finished so early. I know he appears again briefly in the Android Invasion, but...
They possibly didn't realise how popular he was, or maybe it's just easier to say in hindsight how popular he would become.
There seems to be this general fallacy, which I've never really agreed with, but then again, I've never written or produced Doctor Who, that you can really only have one companion because you only need one person to say, "What is it, Doctor?"
Yeah.
And I've always felt that to be an absolute pile of rubbish.
Peter Davison's second series is not only his second series, it's also the series' 20th anniversary. So as a result, we get returning villains in every single story. Is it every story? Or is it just a few stories?
Yes, it's every story there's a returning villain.
Yeah, it's largely the Black Guardian or the Master, though, isn't it?
But the Mara for Snake Dance, which is a bit of a cheat, really, because it's not like she's a... it's a long-term villain. It was like last season.
No. Is it a very good villain, though?
It is, and I still think it's one of the few villains I would like to see return, because I think it has potential to return. Because unfortunately for Doctor Who, and I'm sure people will have a go at me for this, majority of the monsters, if you break them down, fulfill the same sort of role and fulfill the same sort of agendas, more or less. Mm. So, you know...
I thought you said Mara or less then, that would have been...
Mara or less, oh, that's good. Is it better than the first season?
I'm not certain it is.
It's a hard one because the first season's got a bit of a... It's got a couple of...
But it's got Time Flight in it.
Time Flight's an odd one. I still actually quite enjoy Time Flight as brain-numbing watchability factor. I find...
Cause it's better than Time in the Rani.
Yes, exactly. It's better than Time in the Rani. That's no doubt on that. Castrovalve is very strong in the first season. Four to Doomsday, I used to love as a kid when I rewatched it on DVD. Absolute mess.
Yeah, same.
Characters are everywhere. It's a real messy, good idea.
I think it looks good.
Yes, it does.
It did really well with the whole mise-en-scene, but the actual characterization. And
I don't know what Adric's doing through that story. He's a...
No, odd, no. Odd. That's a running theme with Adric for me. I don't know what he's doing a lot of the time.
Well, Kinder was very good, and it was a good story for Adric, I think, as well. Visitation's a very good story. I love it. It's very standard John Nathan Turner sort of Doctor Who, and it worked really well. Yeah. Black Orchid is one of my favourite Peter Davison stories.
Yes.
He shines in that. Earthshock is a very good Cyberman story, I think. The only downside, obviously, is perhaps the continuation of the gold allergy, which gets progressively more and more stupid as the series goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously you get the death of that confused boy. And then obviously you have the generally considered clunker Time Flight. So season 20, I think, is probably a more consistent season. I think that's the argument.
But it opens with Ark of Infinity.
Yeah, which is not one that I particularly...
No, it's the Rice Krispies in Amsterdam, isn't it?
And as we were saying in the previous podcast with Gareth, you've got that terrible Gallifrey, which...
Yeah, IKEA.
IKEA. It starts to feel like
IKEA's Gallifrey range.
Yeah. What else we got in there? Terminus again. I know a lot of people like it because
I think conceptually it's really good. I don't think it's a much better book than his episode.
I find that with a lot of this sort of period, the sort of late Tom Baker and the sort of early to mid Peter Davison. Sometimes execution doesn't really work, but the science fiction ideas are very strong.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I would say of all the seasons we've looked at so far, this is undeniably the weakest season.
I think you're probably right, yeah. How are we going to handle the Sixth Doctor? Because his second series that he appeared in is his first... Well, it's the one that begins with Attack of the Cybermen, but his actual second series is Trial of a Time Lord.
Let's face it, he's fairly doomed on either front because I don't like either of them.
Okay, so we just pick, trying to establish which episodes... We prefer out of each series.
Okay. What, out of the Colin Baker ones?
Yeah.
Okay, so...
22, we've got Attack of the Cybermen, Vengeance on Varos, Mark of the Rani, Two Doctors, Time Lash, Revelation of the Daleks. I think I'm going to Vengeance on Varos straight away on that.
As your favourite?
Yes.
Ooh, that's interesting. A lot of people like Revelation. Don't know. I think I might actually have to go for Revelation. Mark of the Rani's got some fun bits in it.
Mark of the Rani has got some fun bits in it, but you've still got the Master...
The Master is very pathetic by this point.
For no reason. There was a thing in Doctor Who magazine about this a few years ago, and I can't remember who wrote it, but they basically said the drums must have been really loud that day.
Sorry, that was a terrible geeky laugh then. Yeah, it's terrible. But then I suppose after the end of Davison's last season, where he accidentally reduces himself. You know, he's really on a bad run here. The Doctor of the Master. He becomes very much a panto villain at this point.
A sub-panto, I think.
It's terrible. Especially, I think, Anthony Ainley in Legopolis and Castrovalva is
marvellous.
And at this point,
and he doesn't really get it back until Survival.
Well, this is a problem with Mark of the Rani. And I know we're going on a tangent again. Mark of the Rani's problem is that it makes you utterly obsessed with the Doctor. I quite like the way that the Rani actually acts as perhaps you would expect the Master to be written, if it was sort of done back with Delgado, maybe, as a scientist who's massively into his experiments. And the Doctor's this annoying thing that she's getting in the way. But the Master, Ainley's Master, is this sort of slightly embarrassed, obsessed guy. His world now revolves around the Doctor and ballsing things up for him. So, yeah, it's a funny story. I've never been a particular fan of Pip and Jane Baker, I'm afraid. So, no. Revelation of the Daleks for me. Which is the better season? Season 22 or 23, though? I still would say that season 23 is the second season, to be fair.
Yeah, well, it is. It is the second season. Yeah. But because he appeared in 22.
The Twin Dilemma.
Twin Dilemma. We can't really. It's a tricky one to call. But deciding which is the better season is a tricky one to call as well. I think Mind Warp is excellent, but you could quite easily lose the rest of Trial of a Time Lord and just have Mind Warp.
Well, I think for me, the difference is that I think the Sixth Doctor starts to find a better balance in season two. And maybe that is something which is very clear in season twos of all these Doctors. To a certain degree, they start to establish themselves.
Yeah.
And I think they toned Colin Baker down. He wasn't such an abrasive, loud, arrogant bully in this season. He seemed to actually care about having Perry around with him. And for some bizarre reason, he seemed to care in the wrong way that Mel was around with him. And I didn't like bullies. And I thought that was against what the Doctor was meant to be about. Yeah. So season 23 is better because they seem to recognise that. And he's a softer character. And
the thing is, it took them a long time to recognise it, though, didn't they?
It took them a whole series. And I think that's possibly what killed it. Colin Baker's a wonderful actor. And I think he's a lovely fellow. And he loved that role. And they were so busy trying to juxtapose him, I think, with Peter Davison.
Yeah.
That he just became unlikable a lot of the time. And while they tried to make him more likable in season 23, the stories...
The concept is okay. The execution of, you know, the court scenes... I don't know if you remember this. When this was first broadcast, Trial of the Time Lord season I'm speaking specifically about here, on BBC One, they used to do the old photo caption recaps at the beginning of each episode. And this was, you know, they would do that for... like the costume drama of the week or costume drama serial that they were running at the same time. And they were doing this for the Trial of the Time Lord series. Maybe not for every single episode, certainly towards the end of it they were doing it. The whole point I'm trying to make is there, if they needed to do that, they've clearly made a mistake with the concept.
Well, for me, the issue and the big mistake is that after a very troubled previous series, doing a long story arc, especially in the 80s, not a good move.
It doesn't even have to be an arc, as we've seen. I mean, you know, it's easier to say in hindsight that, you know, Russell T. Davies showed them how to do it. But even The Key to Time didn't have all these intrusive interruptions.
It does become intrusive. You're getting into the story and suddenly you're whipped back for a bit of sparring. Thankfully, we don't have to look at season 24 with Sylvester. We can jump straight to season 25, which is a wonderful first opener with Remembrance of the Daleks.
Yeah. I remember watching this first time around. I was thinking, well, this is brilliant compared to what I was watching a couple of years ago. In fact, I don't even, after Time in the Rani, I don't recall watching any Doctor Who for a good couple of months. So I don't think I saw anything until Dragonfire. Well, how old was I in 1987? 11, going on 12. I was crushingly embarrassed watching Time in the Rani.
It was bad.
It was dreadful.
Certainly
the first episode is probably one of the worst offences ever committed to videotape.
Yes.
Season 25, you've got Remembrance of the Daleks and you've got the whole sort of new angle on what the Doctor's been up to all this time.
Where they took the Doctor there really did inform where the Doctor came back in 2005. And obviously people put that on Cartmel's door, but it's also McCoy, because McCoy was very much involved in trying to re-establish something new with the Doctor. He wasn't happy with where it was going in the previous season.
Yeah.
And I really respect the fact that that team got together and did something about it, and they did something dangerous, which is actually contrary to what Hayden was saying on our previous podcast with Hayden Black, who loathed it. But I really loved it, and I loved this season. Even Silver Nemesis, which I think has an appalling second part, I think the first part is fairly interesting, and it's the only episode of Doctor Who which to me has a decent action scene. Ace versus the Cybermen is just such a load of fun. It's stupid, the allergy is annoying, but it's dynamo. It moves, it's got space in it. I think
they know what they're doing by this point, this particular team, don't they? As we were saying with the Pertwee and Tom Baker eras, they know what they're doing by the time the second series comes around.
Yeah.
And I think Silver Nemesis, although you've got the obvious comparison with Remembrance of the Daleks, and, you know, there's no reason why Remembrance of the Daleks shouldn't have been the 25th anniversary serial rather than Silver Nemesis. Silver Nemesis, first broadcast date was on the 23rd of November. It was pretty much the same storyline. Remembrance of the Daleks has got more to it, not just in terms of having a fourth episode, but having a little bit of, you know, you've got the whole racism thing, the master race thing. You've also got the progression of the warring Dalek factions and the progression of Davros into the Emperor Dalek. The Silver Nemesis, really nothing that much of interest happens. And you've got that annoying American woman who John Nathan Turner sort of promoted as some sort of television legend, and no one's ever heard of her before or since, so it would seem. It's just some American bird with bleached blonde hair and a lot of jewellery.
That is the worst scene. Oh, I don't know. The two thugs. The
social workers is pretty bad as well. Yeah, yeah. But it does look really good. What the director got out of it was really good,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I agree. I suppose you could say that it has been attacked, as you say, for being a clone of Remembrance of the Daleks. But you could argue much of Doctor Who is a clone of itself. The formula to Doctor Who is often quite rigid.
Not usually that late, though.
Maybe not, but maybe that's just because it was a very different formula, so it stands out. Because essentially, in the end, really, all it is that in both versions is the Doctor tying up loose ends and nobbling a monster without the monster realising they're about to be nobbled.
With a Time Lord MacGuffin,
I suppose you could argue that they're both after the Time Lord MacGuffin too. I know what you mean. Yeah. I'm perhaps being a little too desperate to justify Silver Nemesis because there are a lot of flaws in it. But I do enjoy it, and I like the fact at the end of it. I suppose for me, while Remembrance of the Daleks is sort of setting up the fact that this is a very different Doctor, Silver Nemesis is actually putting the finger on the pulse and saying, who the hell is this character now? Who is he? And that is very much what Silver Nemesis ends up at the end, is a question of who the Doctor is. So I don't know, maybe you could use that if you wanted to argue in its favour, which no one ever seems to, which is why possibly I'm quite excited at the chance to do so. And Greatest Show of the Galaxy, which is a wonderful episode.
Yeah, it's excellent. How they got to produce something of that quality under the circumstances of was this one a strike or was this asbestos or something? I forget. But basically, the studio space that they were allocated, they weren't able to use, were they?
I didn't know that. No, I didn't know.
Yeah, so they had to film it in a car park. So all the big top scenes and the scenes in what looks like a porter cabin, I think actually is a porter cabin, and the big top's in a car park, yeah.
But it's brilliant. And I think what I like about it when I rewatched it, which I never noticed as a kid, is, and again, this could go back to against Silver Nemesis, is that the Doctor pretty much knows what's going on the whole time. I don't really realise that until the very end when he's talking to Ace, and there's a sort of slight sly reveal that he was on top of everything, that he knew what he was doing. So again, he was playing, if that's the case, he was playing the Gods of Ragnarok as he was playing the Daleks and the Cybermen, but he wasn't copying the same approach as Silver Nemesis did with Remembrance of the Daleks. That's why I think Greatest Show in the Galaxy is great. And if nothing else, I just love that end walkout, you know, the very famous walkout of the pyrotechnic scene, which he didn't realise was going to be so big behind him, and he just carries on walking. Fantastic.
Yeah, I've just looked that up. It was asbestos.
It was asbestos.
Yeah.
I'm glad I rambled and gave you time to do a little research.
Brilliant. And they put up a tent at BBC Elstree.
So we go on, we miss the Eighth Doctor, and we miss the Ninth Doctor.
Yeah.
And we go on to the Tenth Doctor.
2007 series 3.
Oh,
Well, if you compare it to Rose, no, it's not a good start. It's probably on a par with it at best. If you compare it to New Earth, then it's like comparing The Godfather to an Adam Sandler film. So it depends how you compare it, really, doesn't it?
Well, I just remember being disappointed by Smith and Jones. It felt very run-of-the-mill. And I'm a big Russell T. Davis fan.
I was pleased with Smith and Jones because it wasn't New Earth.
I was pleased in the sense that I liked Martha a hell of a lot more than where Rose went. And I know a lot of fans say that as well. I liked Rose for a long time and she really fell out of favour for me. Smith and Jones showed, yes, Martha is an interesting character. I just felt that the Doctor didn't really come across very well in it. He didn't feel like he had advanced. Because as we're looking at the other series that we've been looking at, the Doctor does seem to advance by the second series into a slightly different character. Well, he's a little more
subdued.
There's a character arc there which follows through that he is still hesitant about companions after Rose.
Yeah, well, that goes right to the end, though, doesn't it?
But if you take certainly Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy, certainly, John Pertwee, I think, to a certain degree, throw a slightly different slant on what they've been trying to build on the first series. And I think what bothered me a bit was that Tennant didn't feel any different. And it didn't feel any new energy there. It was the same energy. And if you loved that energy, and I, on the whole, I did, you got more of the same. But it didn't feel like there was anything new there. And although there was later on, as the series went on, we saw some new stuff. But on that first episode, we didn't. I think that's my point. I hope I can edit that down significantly in the mix.
If you do, I want you to leave that disclaimer in.
I will. I promise. Yeah, because I mean, things like 42, Human Nature, Last Utopia, you do see different sides to him. So, yeah.
I've said this countless times in the past. I've said it in the Ultimate Regeneration book, which you can still order on castobras.com, people, if you haven't got your copy yet. Series 3 at the time when I reviewed it, the episodes I reviewed, I was largely raving over. The only ones I don't like, I think, or don't like as much, are the Dalek ones and Last of the Time Lords.
Right.
The rest of it, I think, is marvellous. I love it. The whole feeling that it comes home in the Lazarus experiment, I think, that there's something going on. The Doctor hasn't got a clue what it is. It's threatening. It's a little bit Big Brotherish, and, you know, it's nasty, whatever it is. Obviously, we knew as Doctor Who fans, us hardcore Doctor Who fans, that the Master was coming back. But if you didn't know that and you knew something that was going on, then you're like, what's going on here? And then you've got the bit in 42 when Martha rings her mother and there's someone there listening to the phone call. It's brilliant the way it's all laced in together. That's how you do a story arc.
Yes, it is. I agree.
It's brilliant. I love it. But I just want to go back to what we were talking about with Smith and Jones and New Earth. I think Russell T. Davies, for everything that he didn't get a single first episode right.
No, he didn't. I agree with that. I would very much agree with that. So there we go. That's the whole lot. I think we will see some interesting changes in this season. I think I get the impression that it's going to build on the last season quite well, and I'm looking forward to it.
Certainly looks that way, yeah. Well, obviously, we'll know after Saturday, and we'll reconvene here for another podcast with a K next week and find out what we've learned. So don't forget to tune into the podcast next week. In the meantime, don't miss Doctor Who on Saturday, which is where you'll find it in most places on Earth.
If you have any opinions on what we've said today, if you want to chat to us about it,
you can email me, christian@castobras.com. You can leave a message under this podcast on castobras.com, or you can tweet me on Twitter. It's @castobrasdw.